book. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Through the Keyhole. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, coming to you live from Rochester, New York. Thanks for joining me today on the Paranormal Radio Network. And you can also hear us on UPRN 105.3 FM in New Orleans. That's live. Or you can listen on your cell phone by typing P-A-R-A, then 27627. Do not ask me how that works. I'm still in the last millennium. I have a cell phone. I don't know how to do anything with it, okay? But for those of you who are in the 21st century, yes, you can listen to the shows on the cell phone now. As always, I want to hear from you. If you're listening live, join us on the message board to discuss the program and add your questions and comments. Go to paranormalradionetwork.org to join us in the virtual auditorium, and you can participate in the conversation there through instant messaging. Or if you prefer, you can email me with your questions and comments. My address is kdolan@rochester.rr.com. Or if you prefer telephone, you can call into the show toll-free at 1-877-786-0562. And before we get started, I just want to say welcome back to Joe Montaldo, who is my producer. He's responsible for putting everything out on the air tonight. And not everyone may realize, but Joe actually was hospitalized last week, and we're very glad that he's back. A couple people were wondering what happened to our shows. We can't do anything without Joe. We need him. So, Joe, I'm hoping that you're happy to be back. We're certainly happy to see you. My guest this evening is a political activist, Steve Bassett. He's been on my show before talking about his work at trying to get the U.S. government to disclose what they know about UFOs and ETs. Right now, Steve got a new project just getting started, and I want to ask him about it this evening. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hi, Karen. Good to see you again. Good to be with you, rather.
Well, thanks so much for coming. So, Steve, tell me about the Million Facts on Washington project. I've heard a little bit about it.
This is the most important project that Paradigm Research Group has done in the 12 years since it was started in 1996. To make a long story short, as I've said on your show and countless others, there is an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. This has been well established. People inside government have confirmed this to me privately. My colleagues have had people in government confirm it to them privately, but there's plenty of evidence all over the place. And half the American people now poll that they believe that ETs are, in fact, behind a UFO phenomenon. And 80-90% believe that the government's not telling the truth. So the people are way ahead of the curve on this. Not unusual. But after 61 years, the government has still not formally acknowledged this presence, this ET presence. It didn't do it in the early days for national security reasons, I understand. As the Cold War got worse, it sat on it, and I can understand that too. But the Cold War ended 17 years ago. And I think while there were plans to release it, release this information, after the Cold War, things just kept happening. Things were blowing up, wars were going on. And lots of other bad behavior, and there was always an excuse, I suspect, to just keep it under wraps. But the longer it stays under wraps, the worse it gets. So, as it happens, I believe that next spring, in the first months of the next administration, is in fact the best window of opportunity we've had to end the truth embargo, as I call it, since 1947, and finally get the acknowledgement of the ET presence. I believe the Democratic Party at the think tank level is already thinking this way, leaning this way, and they want to do it as part of a very big program they have planned to turn the country around. The program that they only allude to during the campaign, since the nature of campaigning is you don't actually specifically say what you're going to do, because then you give a target to your opponent, so you just allude to things, and then once you get in office, you suddenly unveil the stuff, and they have some big things they're going to be unveiling. And there's other indicators that they plan to do this. However, and if they win, but they could lose, their feet could turn to clay, they could lose their political will. Somebody will surely blow something up soon enough. So the facts on Washington is the right time to bring this issue home. And after the break, I'll tell you how we're going to do this.
think we're going to break. We don't normally at this time. I'm not sure where that music was coming from.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was just background music because you were getting really, I don't know, it was appropriate.
Yeah, I'm so, I've done so many shows. I've done so many interviews. I hear music, I immediately go to break.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's a reflex at this point. All right, so let's go on.
Yeah, we're getting mood music on the show now. Great.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, I can handle it. So the upshot is this. We need to move now. This is it. This is kind of the defining moment on this issue, I'm pretty sure.
Do you think it's more likely to come out if, this is kind of a loaded question, but do you think it's more or less likely with either party getting in? Like, do you think it's more likely if the Democrats are in, seeing the Clintons' background in this?
I believe it's going to come out either way, but it's easier for the Democrats, who are leading in the polls right now, because they take over, it's a change of party, right? Change of administration, change of party. And it's a lot easier for them to say, look, the previous administration, not our party, couldn't tell you about this, but we can. Right? So they get a lot of the upside, not much downside. A Republican were to win, McCain were to win, then it's a little harder. However, but I know more about what's going on inside the Democratic Party. I know more about some of the people and their inside people. I don't know nearly as much about the Republicans. They're really a closed shop. They've been closed for some time now. It's all secretive. It's all behind the scenes. However,
Ellen could always say, "Well, I saw what happened in Tunguska because I just looked out my back window."
Right? Yeah, with a high powered telescope.
Right.
Now, I'm not. You're not going to take.
Sorry.
I'm not going there. I'm not going to go there. But the fact is that either party is facing the same problem, and that is, in the 17 years since the Cold War, America's prestige in the world has dropped quite a bit. And, you know, our great contributions to the Cold War and, of course, to World War II are now deeper into the past. And other nations are just simply not willing to just simply go lockstep with us on everything, including this. And there are plenty of signs that other nations could make a move on this at any time, particularly France. And so if the next administration doesn't disclose, given that the public awareness grows, the number of sightings continuing, witnesses are coming forward, much more media coverage, it's going to pop. And if another country announces the ET presence, then the United States is basically irrelevant, right? Second fiddle.
Right.
Coming up in the rear behind the elephant going, don't forget us. And that's not going to help. So they don't have a lot of time. So I believe that either party wins, they're going to disclose. But I think the Democrats are more about it, and I'm probably feel a little more optimistic that it'll happen. Nevertheless, but in either case, if we don't step up to the plate, if American people don't step up to the plate and make their intentions known, then any number of things could cause the inside people to go, let's put it off for another 4 or 5 years. You know, we don't want to deal with it now. It's too hard. It's too difficult. And we don't like hard, difficult things. We want things to be easy. So how do we close the deal? Million Facts on Washington, which is homed at factsonwashington.org. And the game is quite simple. We launched it on October the 1st, so everyone, not only U.S., but foreign nationals, we want everybody to send an email, fax, or letter. They've got 33 or whatever days are left now in the election to put together a little tome, short, brief, to the point. And at the website, we have suggested ideas, but no script. We're not providing a one script fits all because they ignore that kind of stuff. They it's too easy to mass generate it. And put that together, have it ready to go to the president-elect's office, which in this case will be a senatorial office of either McCain or Obama, on the day after the election. Letter is the best. Handwritten letter with your name, email, and address is the absolute number one way to get their attention. Next best is a fax. But there's only so many faxes that they can receive, even if they put in multiple machines, which they don't tend to do. And then if you can't, better than nothing is an email. Okay? Or one could do all three. But letters are fantastic. Wonder why? Everyone's opened, everyone's read. Why? Because after the election, lots of people send money to the new candidate in the party.
I was just going to say, now, how do you know this? Because I think most people have this idea that, yeah, conventional wisdom is, well, write to your congressman, write to your senator.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people, I think, don't really have a concept that it does lead to anything.
Well, one letter does not lead to anything.
Right.
100 letters gets their attention, 1,000 letters gets their attention, 10,000 letters, you're really starting to get their attention. 1,000,000 letters, emails, and faxes is a major event. It's huge. The media will be all over it. But as I was pointing out, because letters come in after deduction, they have money, and they have to open every single letter. So you know it's going to get open, you know it's going to get looked at, and that means the press have access to it. So we want people to have those ready to go. They got 77 days between the day after the election and the inauguration on January the 20th. We want to put 1,000,000 letters, faxes, and emails into the president-elect's office, senatorial office initially, and then later on they'll open up a transition office. I'll get that information up on the site, and they can send it there. People can send all three, letter, fax, email. That's fine. No problem. They can also copy their congressional members. Fine. But don't send it to the current president. That's not the target. The target is the president-elect. And don't send anything now, because we don't know who the president is yet. November the 5th, we know. But get it ready to go now. So we've got 33 days. And I believe if we can get anywhere near approach 1,000,000 correspondences coming in on this issue, and as I point on the website, the three key points that we're looking for in these brief but to the point correspondences are: one, the president should call for a full briefing from his military and intelligence services regarding the extraterrestrial presence and related phenomena. And if they tell him he doesn't have a right to know, you fire them and you hire new people and ask them. And if they say no, you fire them and you keep doing that until they actually tell you what you got to know. The president will call or support congressional hearings for the testimony from the witnesses that have been coming forward, scores of military and agency people, and that the new president would formally acknowledge to the American people the extraterrestrial presence. These are the key points that need to be one or more in, and then whatever else they want to put in, into the letter, fax, or email that they're going to send, and have it ready to go. And it needs to be, the more we can front load, we got 77 days to get 1,000,000 in the door, but the more we front load, the better. So that if everybody pops it in November 5, starts the faxing, starts the sending of the letters, then they will all come in a big rush, at least a lot of them. And I'm going to make sure the media in Washington know that this is coming, and they'll be down there. And so you can kind of envision articles in the Post and other papers with pictures of giant bags of mail, right? You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
As well as they'll read some of these letters. They'll probably publish some of them. This is going to get the country's attention, is going to get the world's attention. And we are certainly encouraging people outside the U.S. to send a letter particularly. Because, you know, when you got a giant bag of letters there, how do you know, how many came from Europe or Canada or whatever? They're all together, aren't they? So the impact is powerful. And, we're asking, and this is on the website at faxonwashington.org, that everybody that sends a letter, an email, or a fax, contact PRG at the email address, PRG@paradigmresearchgroup.org, and let us know that you've done that. Copy us on the email, and then, or just send a note. Say, look, I sent a letter. I sent my letter to the president-elect. I sent my email. I sent my fax. This will help me drive the media on this end. Right, so if I contact the media and they say, "What do you mean you're getting a bunch of emails and faxes?" I don't know that. How do we know that? I say, "Look, I got about 100,000 emails here that said they have. You want to see them? Right, I'll send you a database."
You're not going to have any time to do anything but answer emails.
I won't be answering those. These are just notifications. In other words, you send a letter and then send an email to Paradigm and say, "Hey, I sent my letter."
Wow.
Right, and then I'll put that in a database. I'll put that in a file. And so then I can go to the media and say, look, I've got indications that over 50,000 letters have been sent on this issue. You need to get down to the Barack Obama or Senator McCain's office and find out if those things are pouring in.
Yeah.
Now, in 1977, Jimmy Carter, as most of, I think, your audience already knows, he's a kind of a naive guy, very honest guy, very truthful guy, and I think he was really pretty naive in 1976 when he was running for president. But you know, sometimes that's a good thing. In any event, he mentioned that he had a UFO sighting, because he had in 1969, which he reported in 1973. Well, that got the attention of a lot of people, and so he was asked some questions. He's the only president, Democratic or Republican nominee for president in the campaign at the end, ever asked about this issue. And he said he had a sighting, and then so they was asked. I said, well, look, if you become president, will you? And it was not a foregone conclusion he would become president in that election. But if you came president, would you release all the information that we've got in the government file? He said, yeah, I'll do it. So when he won, he got about 10,000 letters. Remember, this is before email, right? This is before the internet. He got 10,000 letters, and he had to assign some staff people to handle these letters. And they were pretty significant letters and intense letters. In fact, Larry Bryant wrote a book at them called UFOs at the White House about these, and you can actually go and read some of these. They're intense, long tomes, reports, studies, things like that. And he actually attempted, again, this is his naivete here, to initiate a study on the ET issue out of the White House. Only president to ever do that. And then, simultaneous with that, he was approached by Alfred Weber, who was working at the Stanford Research Institute, who also wanted to do a study, and they agreed to cooperate. Two studies. Well, the Department of Defense quickly shut down the SRI study. As far as the one that was initiated by Carter, they couldn't just shut that down. You know, they had to be diplomatic about it. So they essentially just were passive-aggressive and held back until it just died away. But before it died away, it drew in Danny Sheehan, who eventually in 2000 talked about this, and it did generate a book and a report called UFO Enigma by Marcia Smith, a fairly accomplished civil servant who is now retired. Never talked about this issue. I'd love to have her come out to my ex-conference and do that.
Have you asked her?
I tried to. I think I had her contact information, but I never got a response back. So that's what happened in 1977, because of 10,000 letters. Now, there was no way that the disclosure was going to take place. And so while I appreciate what Carter tried to do, and he never talks about it, he never talks about these studies, I think I know why, there was no way it was going to happen. It was too soon. Because the Cold War was
over. Presidents don't like to talk about projects that didn't work.
Yeah, that's true, but this is no trivial thing. I mean, it's a pretty big thing, but he never gets asked about it either. I mean, they never ask him about the studies. They'll ask him about UFOs, but the press doesn't know enough to ask him about the studies, even though the stuff's up on the internet now. But whatever. Carter's still alive, and he may yet speak to this, but 77 was too soon. Now, 31 years have gone by. The Cold War's ended. And now, it's a new ballgame. So, can we put a million, given the ability to promote and get to the people now with the kinds of communication tools we have? Yes.
Oh, absolutely. We could do a million all on the same day. There's no
well,
reason not
the people are there. I mean, look, if you look at the audiences of all the shows that are out there, and the websites and everything, I think the core audience on this issue, the core group that's clearly following it and has for a long time, knows a lot about it. It's in around the 20 million range. So we just need 1 million, 1/20th of that group write a letter. And boom, we've got a major international event. But there are half the American people say they think ETs are in fact behind UFO phenomena. Well, that's about 125 million adults. So can we generate it? Yes, we can. We just need to act. Now, one letter didn't make a difference. I understand that. Just like one vote doesn't make a difference. But when you act in concert, you can make a huge difference. And so you just have to write that letter and trust that hundreds of thousands of your fellow countrymen will do the same. And they're going to, because this is going to be heavily publicized. It's already been an international press release out. There's a press release out on PR Web. A number of other organizations have put out press releases on it. Flash News has got a story out that's going to go to all the radio stations in the country. Created a Facebook page, Facebook group page, they're called, Million Facts on Washington. And I've contacted 20 or 30 other groups with a combined total of, I don't know, probably all 50,000, 50,000 members in the group, with a notification about the Million Facts. And Facebook is probably the most powerful networking community on the internet right now, with 100 million active users, who are all separated by 6 degrees, right? You know about 6 degrees of separation, right?
Well, I remember that about the Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, 6 degrees, Kevin Bacon. Everybody in Facebook, all 6 million, 100 million, are probably separated by 6 degrees, friend of a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. And so when something gets going in Facebook, it can travel. It could spread to all 100 million in 30 days or less. Now, not all issues could possibly do that. This is one that might. This is a big deal. If we can put these letters and faxes into the president-elect's office with a good number of them front-loaded in the first 10 days after the election, we will create a media event. We will generate questions to the president-elect. It will totally change the picture and could very likely be the trigger that finally brings disclosure or guarantees disclosure in the early spring of 2009. And disclosure of the extraterrestrial presence is a huge deal and will potentially have very powerful benefits for the human race, if only just knowing the truth about the world you're in is a wise way to go.
I just pictured whichever person turns out to be the president-elect suddenly regretting having won the election before he's even in office.
No, they're going to love this. It's one of the great. It'll be one of the great legacies of all time, political legacies of all time.
It could be.
Sure.
Or they could be the greatest scapegoat of all time.
I guess if some of the stuff about the aliens is uncomfortable, they could, I guess, blame the president. But what are they going to do? They say, look, if you'd just not told us the truth and left us ignorant, would be happier. But I think American people, that's not the way they want to operate.
No, I agree with you completely, but I think there are an awful lot of people who will, I mean, you know how it is. It takes time to get used to the idea.
One of the beauties of this is that most of the people, virtually all the people that initiated the truth embargo back in 1952, well, actually between 47 and 50, they're all gone.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the rest that kind of maintained it, they're just following orders. So they're not going to blame the president for the truth embargo that announces this. They're going to give the president credit for being the executive that signed off on this acknowledgement. It's mostly upside, but there is another extremely important component here, which people have to stretch their brain a little bit to understand, but if they do, they'll see why. And that is this, that in addition to the research over the last 60 years has certainly proven the extraterrestrial presence beyond a reasonable doubt, but it's also established a pretty almost conclusive conclusion that our government has had for 60 years crash vehicles, ET vehicles, that we have been studying intensely with many, many, many billions of dollars spent on understanding and developing the tech that's involved in those craft. And the two techs we're interested in are how they fly and the energy that makes it possible. We're talking magnitudes above what we are able to do in the civilian world now. There's evidence that they have made craft, reverse engineered and created craft, they're able to do similar things, which means that they're clearly of understanding a great deal of the tech there. But that technology is not available to us. Now, we're being told every day about the terrible things that confront us. Economic collapse, melting polar ice caps, holes in the ozone, pending wars over water and food, terrorism from political malcontents, and on and on, polluted oceans, polluted rivers, carbon emissions. We're given all of these awful scenarios, but very little are we offered as to how we're going to solve the problem, other than, well, recycle more. There are a lot of little schemes and dreams that are out there, but most people don't believe they're anywhere near enough to truly deal with the issue. So we've got a real problem. I mean, what are we going to do? Well, we do have some aces in the hole, and the ET tech is one of them. That technology completely transforms business models, making businesses that are marginally profitable now very profitable, opening up thousands of new business models that would create new companies, new businesses that would hire people. Then, of course, we could share that technology with the rest of the world, thus, to the extent that we license it, reverse our balance of trade, to the extent that we provide it cheaply, improve our standing in the world. It changes, it's a game changer, and it's sitting right there in the underground research laboratories that are funded by the black budget and exist out in the, primarily in the western states. And the reason it's not available to the civilian world is that there's no way they could bring that tech into play without having to end the truth embargo. Mm-hmm. So it's a hostage to the truth embargo. Yeah. And the truth embargo, acknowledge the ET presence, get the technology.
That's one of the things I was thinking of asking you is, you know, what difference will this actually make to you and me and the guy in the street if the whole UFO thing does come out?
The tech makes all the difference.
The technology.
All the difference.
Because there are a lot of people who say, okay, so they're real, they're there, they're here,
mm-hmm.
big deal. You know, but absolutely, that would, the technology that we have right now
right.
is failing us.
And that's technology we have reverse engineered and worked on for 60 years in crashed vehicles. If disclosure ultimately leads to contact and formal open engagement with these entities, well, then technically we may have access to far more non-human technology that we could use to deal with our problems. But that's a step beyond, and that, the ETs are involved there, and I don't go there because I...
Now, what do you mean by engagement with them?
In other words...
On good terms?
I believe that... I suspect that once we have self-acknowledged, self-disclosed, the governments of the world, and we've gotten through that hurdle, and then we've had some time to adjust, and obviously a lot of people in the world are going to spend a lot of time thinking about it, and there's going to be a huge amount of information generated and transferred out. And after we've absorbed a lot of that, I think that I have a strong suspicion that formal contact will then take place. It's a logical extension.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have that period of adjustment, if you don't have that acknowledgement followed by that education process, then formal contact slowly turning up is going to be pretty dramatic, possibly even traumatic. So I see a pattern here that does make some sense. And if in fact that's the case, if disclosure needs to take place before formal contact, and that's the case, then we're not just talking about the tech we've been working on in reverse engineering labs, but we may eventually shorten the time until we have access to the ET, a larger range of ET tech through direct cooperation. Now, this is getting real speculative. I'm just trying to say that the upsides are huge here. They're hardly trivial. And if you look at the problems that are being tossed at us, if you look at the scenarios that are being tossed at us day in and day out, at the center of every one of them, one way or another, is energy. Lower cost, cheaper energy, cleaner energy solves a good deal of the problems that the human race is facing, and thus would have enormous political implications in terms of being able to avoid wars, conflicts, terrorism, and everything else. Not to mention, you know, the melting ice caps.
Right.
So that's what's at stake here. Because they can't, let me repeat this. It's been clear, they cannot bring that technology out of those laboratories without ending the embargo. So until the embargo ends, we're not going to get at it. It's just that simple. So we need
it. Don't you think it would be possible for them to bring out this new technology and just put it forth as, you know, here's this amazing new breakthrough that we've made. We humans have come up with this.
No. The reason is that we know too much, way too much information. We've been talking about this ET tech reverse stuff for years and years and years. There have been books and websites and everything else, and so they turn up with this technology, and nobody's going to believe for a second that they just cooked this stuff up and are letting it out of the bag now. Nobody. And so the press will go bananas. I mean, the press will simply be all over them.
Think so? Because it seems to me, based on the UFO special that was just on ABC recently, that was not really even of interest to a lot of people who've been following the UFO research.
Well, that's just one documentary. And it's not a question of interest. You posed this hypothetical that they suddenly announced this kind of technology is available. They've been working on it. See, that's a very distinct situation. And with that kind of announcement, the press would immediately seize on all the information that's been put out there for years on this reverse engineering ET connection, and they're going to be all over them with, wait a minute, is this the ET stuff they've been talking about? And once the press gets the bit between the teeth, they're like a landslide. I mean, you can't stop them.
I guess the trick is getting them to get that bit. Of course, we need Angela Joyner.
Well, but the bit. See, that's the bit. You just posed the bit. The government would announce tomorrow, oh, we have anti-gravitic drive. Didn't we tell you? That's the bit,
well,
believe me.
No, I mean, I can't see them coming out and saying, oh, we've had this. Didn't we mention that? But they could say, oh, my God.
We just invented it. Well, then they've got to prove that. They've got to say, well, how, you mean, what, and people are going to, well, when did you start work on it? Who are the people involved? How long have you had?
And all they'd have to say is, well, it's been a secret military program. You know, it's national security. We couldn't talk about it.
We couldn't talk about it. And we've been sending astronauts up into space on exploding chemical rockets, and we've lost 21 of them, and 14 rather. But I mean, they would. The questions would just come and come. It's a trigger that they could not possibly survive. That's why they can't bring it up. They just could not survive. And that's partially due to the work that's been done. I mean, the education, the UFO ET activist community has increased the public awareness on this issue profoundly, with not a lot of money, but done the job. I mean, maybe ABC has only got a couple of decent documentaries or even two documentaries out there, but believe me, there are hundreds and hundreds of other documentaries that are out there that have been on cable television for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And books and of course the websites by the thousands. So the public awareness is near saturation.
Yeah, well, I'm absolutely with you on this, Stephen. I mean, I would love to see a response like that from the media. I've been a bit frustrated by years of being involved in the field as well. I mean, I've been more on the edges of it, but I've seen public opinion. You know, I've seen documentaries come out that are supposed to be this big mainstream thing. Everybody gets so excited when Peter Jennings is going to talk about UFOs.
Yeah.
And they still ended with the giggle.
Well, some. But, I mean, those, again, it's very hard for people that are inside on this issue to look at these kinds of things objectively. My job, when I look at a documentary, whether it was the original Peter Jennings or the remake that just showed, I try to look at it from the eyes of just the average person in the country. And from that perspective, those documentaries were quite inciting and very supportive that something very profound is going on from their point of view. They don't see the flaws that we see. But there was more than enough in those documentaries. Of course, there's even stronger documentaries elsewhere, like Out of the Blue, which has been shown on cable TV and is available. But the media has been...
It has that Dolan guy in it, doesn't it?
What now?
That has that Dolan guy in it, doesn't it?
Yes, it certainly does. He's in a lot of stuff. Turning up.
Yeah.
Because he's so good looking. I mean, I'm not as good looking as this. That's why I don't get as many documentaries.
He is. He comes across well on the camera. You
yes,
know, our
he
kids
does.
Don't even think it's interesting anymore. That's right. Your dad's on TV, and they're like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's the fate of all.
I'm reading a book here.
Yeah, that's the fate of all celebrity husbands.
I know. Well, then they turn to me and they're like, how come you're not on TV, Mom?
Oh, well, then that's another issue. So you're going to have to work on that.
Yeah.
But you'll have your shot. The time is coming. But the other thing, in terms of the media, look, I'm following the media very closely. And at the Paradigm Research Group main website, which is paradigmresearchgroup.org, I've got a media archive there that's now over 2,500 articles. Now, these are mainstream articles, not paranormal press, alternative press articles. 2,500 articles with links to them. You can actually read them. Most of them are in their original web form. From mainstream English print media, English print and website stuff, going back to the 1940s, but mostly recently. And in the last couple of years, that they're exploding in the numbers. I mean, this year we're already over 800, which is more than double last year, and last year was double the year before. So the coverage in the media is increasing very rapidly, and every aspect of the field is covered. Now, at the level of the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and the LA Times, no, they're still in the tank for the issue with the government. They're still holding back, which I believe is a deal they struck years ago with the government. So that helps to keep a bit of a lid on it, but it's only for so long because everybody else is covering it like crazy. And every once in a while they get a decent article, and those are in there too. So if you go and read those articles, the immediate impression you get is, no, this is being covered by journalists all over the world. And it is. So the media coverage is actually getting better. And when something comes along that's fairly interesting and provocative, like the Stevensville sighting, the medias are really getting into it. I'll give you an example. Jeff Peckman, the activist in Denver, who is pushing for an interesting little angle. He's pushing for an extraterrestrial affairs commission for the city of Denver. to address the issue, because obviously it's going to affect everyone. And he's done these things before, so he sort of knows how to do it, and it attracted a lot of attention. Well, he had over 16 articles on that in the Rocky Mountain News.
Wow, that's fantastic.
I've got an archive on that stuff on my website, Paradigm Research Group. That article, looked at about 53 articles. So he got so much coverage, he got on a Letterman show.
Wow.
So that's just a local guy trying to get an E.T. first commission in Denver. The Stevensville sightings generated quite a bit of press, so did the O'Hara sightings. So what I'm saying is, if the government were to announce tomorrow that, we weren't able to tell you, but now we can, we have anti-gravitic drive, believe me, the media would go absolutely ballistic. And before the dust cleared, the cover-up would be over. And they know that, which is why they don't announce that drive. That's why you can't use it. That's why the energy systems are not available while we're going down the drain out here. You know, we got Gore telling us that Florida is going to be underwater, and we've got the Defense Department telling us we're facing wars over food and thirst in the near future. We've got concerns about pollution levels in the ocean, the destruction of the ozone layers, which could lead to all kinds of problems, and all of this stuff, overpopulation, and of course terrorism, which is fundamentally driven by discontent, people that are unhappy with their lot, not enough to eat, not enough food, not enough land, whatever, being exploited by larger interests. This stuff is all ahead of us, and it looks pretty bad, which is why the ratings, government ratings in the country are so low. Congress is, what, 9-10% now, President 28. Well, that technology could turn most of that around, but we can't get to it because there's a truth embargo in place, and the inside people are struggling with ending it. So we need to reach out with a helping hand. And in other words, the million facts on Washington is really the people saying, look, we realize you're sort of in a tough spot there, right? So here's the deal. We're going to give you permission. It's okay. Here's a million letters basically saying it's okay. Tell us the truth. We can handle it. All right? We're going to lift your burden. But in a more pragmatic sense, what it's doing is sending a message to the people inside that are already leaning this way, that they're going to be and I'm almost afraid to say this, they're going to be received as liberators.
Whoa.
Liberators of the truth, right?
Wow.
And they will be. They will be an extraordinary thing, and it will produce a lot of positive stuff. Now, some of the information that will emerge in time, remember, disclosure is just the acknowledgement of the E.T. presence. It's not a dump of everything that they know about E.T.s. It's just the acknowledgement of their presence. Over time, after that, we will learn more. And I suspect that some of the things that we will learn will be a little upsetting. Gee, what else is new, right?
Well, yeah, and I'm thinking when this does come out, because someday it's going to have to, no matter what happens, and it sounds like it's going to come out very soon with mm-hmm. the Million Facts project going on, I don't see how this could possibly not work. Really.
Well, I mean, it could not work, but let me say this.
Yeah.
It will definitely advance the ball up the field.
It'll definitely push everything a lot closer.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's no question that 10,000 letters trigger the President Carter to start two studies. I mean, 100,000 letters? No. It would be a very big deal. So we're really this close. All we need to do is act in concert. Just act together. I mean, it's not a big, complicated thing, right?
Well, right. I mean, just write a letter.
Write a letter. It takes about 15 minutes and a 42-cent stamp.
Yeah.
And you got 32 days to do it before it has to be sent. What could be easier than that? So
really put everything out on your website, all the information.
It's all right there at factsonwashington.org. This couldn't be any easier.
Yeah.
But we have to act together. Now, every person out there that wants to know the truth about this should write a letter. Every person out there who's a contactee and would prefer not to be ridiculed about that or be able to talk about it openly should write a letter. Every person that's out there that's is deeply concerned about how much secrecy we have in this country, who's concerned about black budget operations and so much that's going on outside the oversight of the Congress should write a letter. Every person out there that believes we need open, transparent government should write this letter. Every person that wants that technology, wants to be able to, would like to see gasoline maybe selling for 20 or 50 cents a gallon for a while, or be able to heat their homes for a couple of bucks a month, should write a letter. Right? Every person that would like to see R be able to take an anti-gravitic barge that didn't cost all that much to build and load it up with all the nuclear waste in the world and drop it into the sun, thus ridding ourselves and not having to spend untold billions training it over to Yucca Mountain, should write a letter. Right? And I could go on and on and bore us all to death. But you get my point. I think I've already raised enough reasons why 20 million people should write a letter. Now, I don't want to talk about 20 million letters, right? That would be like a nuclear political bomb going off. I'm willing to settle for a mil, right? That's all I ask. I want one mil. Anything after that is gravy.
Wouldn't it be great to see 20 million, though?
Eh. Wow. It would be great to see the American people acting together about almost anything. But the powers that be love to chop us up.
Yeah.
They love to confuse us with BS and break us up into splinter groups and hit us with misdirection. And they've been mesmerizing the people, but they're starting to run out of tricks in their bag. And I think they just got nailed pretty big on this issue here on the bailout. I mean, they had, now in this case, let me make it, they got millions of faxes and emails, mostly emails, on the bailout. All right. Now you may say, well, why didn't that create a massive media thing? Well, because there was no shock, there was no surprise there. The press would have expected anything less.
Right.
You know, we're talking about economic calamity, and we're talking about depression and everything. Sure, people are going to send an email and say, what the hell are you doing? And of course, because the trust in government is so low, not a small consequence of 60 years of denying the very reality of the world. I mean, the truth embargo has undermined credibility in government substantially. It's been a kind of like a fundamental engine of discredibility that's been in place for 60 years, eating away at the social contract in a way, and encouraging people inside to do more, meaning, hey, if we can get away with the truth embargo about ETs, which are flying all over the place, we can get away with anything, right? So when this crisis comes in, then Congress goes to the people and says, we need to bail these people out. Nobody believed them at all. And the president said, we need to rescue the Wall Street. The people said, I don't believe you. And so the letters and emails are running 60, 70, 80 to 1 against the bailout, which made it tough for them to act, didn't it? So when your trust in government drops to 8, 9, 10%, you can't get anything done. So when the ship really hits an iceberg, everybody's running around saying, I'm not getting in my life jackets. I don't believe a damn thing you say.
Popular perception of everyone in Wall Street is that they've already got way more money than I do, so why should I be giving them money to bail out their business? They've
well, the president and the Congress tried to make a case. They tried to make the case. But most people didn't want to hear it. They didn't believe them. They said, I don't know what you're saying, but I don't believe a damn thing you say. You lie all the time. You never tell us the truth about anything.
Mm-hmm.
You said there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. There weren't. You say there's no ETs here. Well, clearly there are. So you can't have trust level. You can't have approval ratings at the 9-10%. People think it's funny and they make jokes about it, believe me. But when a crisis comes, man, you're screwed.
Can't treat that way.
So we need to turn all of this around. And the first thing we need to do is get the government in the truth business. And if you're going to tell the truth, you need to tell some big truths, not little truths.
Now, I still find it hard to believe, though, since we're talking about belief, that a lot of just average citizens, people on the street, are going to believe that there are ETs and UFOs because the government says so. And
well, half of them already believe it, remember.
Right,
so you already got half in your camp.
We'd be more likely to lose some. Like, if the government says they're real, then they must not be.
Well, that's a reasonable point, and be assured that if a disclosure announcement takes place, the government will be able to produce more than enough evidence to close the deal. Not that it's the... First of all, there's two points here. One, if the government were to make that announcement, a good deal of the population and most of the press would immediately then turn to the entire research production of the UFO ET field since 1947, which has always been there. But they would turn to it with a vengeance. And so when they go look at the work that's been done, they will say, oh, yeah, it's true.
Now, do you think a president-elect is going to be able to do this? Or even a president in office?
No, what I'm saying I'm saying that a president-elect purely on his own, if, you know, nobody else wanted to do it, and the president just said I wanted to do it, it would be tough. But that's not what's going to happen. I believe that the insiders, that the people that have been managing the issue inside, are ready to go ahead. But they can't do it unilaterally. They do need the cooperation of the executive. So I think the Democratic thinkers are strategizing doing it anyway, and I believe that they may have already made some contacts with some of because the high end people in both parties, they have all have their contacts in the intelligence community and the military community, and they're able to communicate deeper down if they want to. They may have already made some contacts on this. So what we have is a coming together of a developing consensus within the management groups that are managing ET issue within government and the political party of power, whichever it is, though most likely it'll be Democrat. And, of course, that's what you have to have. You have it. But still, they have to pull the trigger on the decision. And that's the final act, and that's the tough one, and that's what they haven't been able to do. So that's why we need the million facts on Washington, to basically say, it's okay. Do it. Right? But even if they don't get that message, right, this is a important point I'm going to make here. Even if the inside group misses the point here, and all of these letters pour in, and they're going, well, you know, that's fine, but we still have a problem here, and we got to make the call. That many letters turning up is going to set the media's hair on fire, and they're going to get going. And again, once the media gets the bit between their teeth, you can't stop them. They will follow you to the ends of the earth. They're like a giant avalanche just coming down the mountainside. And as you know, there's ample amount of material. So once they get going, there's just tons of stuff they can go find and see, read, that will just feed this, and that will probably end it right there. Right? Just end it right there. So we're right at the brink of putting this away once and for all. And the million facts is my effort to take us the final way. Now, there's other people doing stuff, and not alone here. There's other things happening all the time, and so it's not just that. But I'm in a unique position to, you know, all the work I've done the last 12 years sort of fits beautifully into this particular initiative. I've got the media contacts. I've got the internet websites. I've got the mail lists. I've got the ability to do media. As I mentioned in my press release, I've already booked 26 shows. Of yours, obviously yours is one of them. And I probably will pick up another 25 in the next few weeks. So, and then we created the Facebook page so we could tap into the 100 million Facebook users. So, you know, I just am in the right position, the person to be able to get this out. So, the million facts may be the point, you know, the point of the spear on this. And that's fine.
So what do you foresee yourself doing after this comes out?
So it's a love, it's a,
I told
it's a
you so tour?
Problem I'd love to have. Boy, would I love to have that problem.
Rich was saying today, you know, he's going to be kind of annoyed if it all comes out now. He says, then nobody will want my book. I said, you're kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's
going to
want
history
of, you know, how did all this happen.
No, buy it. Yeah. People would be selling books fast and you can get them printed. When disclosure takes place, I'll do as much media as I can and try to get the media to. I'll try to promote the history of the thing and also all the people who've been involved, and try to get the media to get to them too. In other words, I'll try to help get as much exposure to the researchers and the activists at post disclosure as possible, so they're in the mix. They're not left out of the mix, and not shoved aside by the mainstreamers who will be moving very quickly and act like experts because that's just what they do. That's the first thing. And then I'll probably try to immediately raise some money to expand Paradigm Research Group's operations. In the back of my mind, if I had the funds, I'd love to convert Paradigm Research Group into a Washington think tank devoted to exopolitical matters.
Yeah, you've spent all these years working on getting this out. So once it comes out, then your focus would
have to change. I mean, you're in the post-disclosure world at that point. But it'll be a hell of a lot more interesting and fluid because, you know, when now we're swimming upstream against a headwind, post-disclosure, we're swimming downstream with the wind at our back. And so I'll be looking to maybe convert Paradigm Research Group into a think tank. And undoubtedly write a book. I've got one book with Grant Cameron that we're still waiting on a book deal proposal from a New York publisher. They're dragging their feet. I think maybe the recent financial mess is backed them off.
Yeah, it's slowing everything down.
But I'll try to get a book out as soon as possible post-disclosure. And then there's an infinite number of other possibilities. I mean, it's a whole new world. I mean, we'll be building a new world, really, in a sense.
When this gets picked up by the media, I'm sure that all of a sudden publishers will be coming out of the woodwork calling you.
Well, I think everybody has a book out prior will certainly be approached, and we'll see a lot of books. I wasn't sure about this 10 years ago, but thanks to the alternative media that's developed and the blog talk and Blogspot and all the internet radio and also, of course, the website exposure, the ability to put press releases out, I think that the people that have been involved in this field pre-disclosure are pretty well known, and I don't think they're just going to be pushed aside post-disclosure. I think the world will come to their door. They're going to know how to get to them. They're going to know who they are. There's a core, as I say, audience of about 20 million in the U.S. alone that knows generally what's going on and most of the key players. So the world will come to them, and they'll be able to speak to the issue. And I think the world will quickly figure out that they pretty much know what was going on back then, and that the newcomers that are going to emerge out of that, the universities that are going to all claim to be experts don't know diddly squat. Hopefully some of the universities will bring some of these people in, make them visiting professors, and immediately start teaching courses. The philanthropic organizations, the grant institutions, will make money available for research. And a lot of the pre-disclosure people will be able to partake in that. I mean, I'm being a little bit, perhaps, Pollyannish here, but, again, the Internet levels the playing field. So I just have a sense that we won't be disappointed there, unless you have the misfortune of not living long enough. You know, a whole lot of people that pursued this issue did not make it to the finish line.
I can't help but feel that it's going to be very disruptive and maybe very unpleasant for a while, at least. I mean, I can see a lot of the benefits, and ultimately there's the philosophical benefit of wouldn't it be nice to live in a world where your government doesn't lie to you all the time?
Well, yeah, but that will take some time. That will only be a step in the right direction. Look, the kind of unpleasant we're getting now with people out of work and losing their homes and jobs disappearing and all the financial fear that's being spread, that's unpleasant. I think in the months after, people are going to be excited. They're going to be absolutely excited. They're going to be on fire. They're going to want to know more and more and more and more and more. They're going to go look at all the documentaries and all the stuff that's already available, but they'll be looking at it with fresh eyes. And it's just really an amazing story, and it's really great. And there's not that much truly disturbing stuff. I think people read about the cattle mutilations and want to go, I wonder why the hell they're doing that. And certainly they'll read about the abductions, and they'll go, that's a little uncomfortable. Sure.
What I keep coming down to when I think about disclosure, I picture somebody, government representatives and spokespeople coming out and saying, we've known about it all this time. Yes, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. And I picture the people saying, well, then what if they're real, then what about abductions? Does that mean those are real? And why haven't you stopped it?
They'll probably say because we couldn't. We couldn't stop it. Now, let's take a strong scenario.
That's really scary.
Let's talk about that. Let's say that
we are going to have to go to break in a really short time, so let's do a little bit now, and then we'll have to pick it up.
Well, let me tell you the scenario we're going to talk about after the break.
Warning here.
Here's the scenario. The government comes out and announces the disclosure, announces the ET presence.
Uh-huh.
And, some weeks go by, and after a while, the contactee issue sort of develops, and before you know it, the abduction question is brought forward, and the government then announces or then reveals that, we sort of cut a deal back in the 40s and 50s that in return for some technology, we would let them, we would basically say, hey, look, if you got to abduct people, you got to abduct them, do what you got to do. We're not going to get in your way. So that's the scenario. So after the break, we'll talk about how I think that'll play.
Okay, and that's a perfect time for break. So you're listening to Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Karen Dolan. My guest this evening is Steve Bassett, who is a political activist who's got a new project going on called the Million Facts on Washington. and this is designed to get the government finally to explain what they know about UFOs. And you can go to his website at Million Facts. It's Million Facts on Washington, right?
But the facts is, but the website is factsonwashington.org.
Keep it short. Factsonwashington.org.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, don't go too far. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. We're back. You're listening to Through the Keyhole on Paranormal Radio Network and also live on UPRN 105.3 FM in New Orleans. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and my guest this evening is Steve Bassett. He's a political activist who's been working for years to get the U.S. government to tell what they know about UFOs and ETs. Right now, if you're just joining us and you missed the first part of the conversation, he's got a new project going on called Million Facts on Washington. He wants us all to write to the president-elect following the election and ask for disclosure. And at the break, we had just gotten to discussing what the post-disclosure world would be like. And, Steve, I know you had a lot more thoughts we just barely touched on before we went to break.
Discussing one of an infinite number of potential post-disclosure hypotheticals. Which make a great, I mean, you could kill a definite, you know, party evening, all right, at somebody's house just talking about the post-disclosure world. but this one has come up many times, and it's worth discussing. Again, I'm not trying to be callous here, but rather just very realistic, because I need to, that's the role I play, to try to assess politically and socially what would take place as we decide how to move forward. So, the scenario that I posed was that in the weeks after a disclosure event takes place, or months perhaps, the abduction issue finally sort of gets into play and the questions are being asked. And lo and behold, the government announces, as part of their process of providing the stuff to the people, that they did in fact strike a deal with the ETs, the Greys, or thereabouts, back in the 50s, say, that they would pretty much not interfere with this non-consent contact that is often referred to as abduction in return for whatever, right? Some quid pro quo. Now, the question is, what would be the reaction to that? Well, here's the first thing, all right? Simple fact is that the vast majority of all people are not abductees. Very profound majority. And while they would be sympathetic overall, it wouldn't be their ox being gored. Right? It would be, wow, that's not cool, but I wasn't, you know, part of that program. I wasn't in it, so what can I say? Those who were, all right, would be, I think, irritated that the government had done that. But frankly, their principal irritation would come from the fact that they were being dealt with by non-human entities without their consent. The fact that the government might agree to it, frankly, is almost incidental. Right, they got bigger fish to fry, bigger problems. So
I don't know. I can't quite agree with you on that one, but
well, I'm sure they would voice their irritation. But overall, I mean, the real issue is the fact that they're abducted. And again, the vast majority of people are only going to be moderately sympathetic. Now, but let's go further. It's very possible that once disclosure takes place and this whole thing is out in the open, that those non-consent contacts may in fact end. And so the act of disclosure brings about the end of that activity. In which case, all those people who would not be happy about such a deal the government would have made would have at least the benefit of knowing that it's over and not going to be harassed anymore. So you can see just to get a touch of how complicated it is. But there's going to be a certain amount of discomfort, but that is simply no reason to continue to play this grotesque charade where the government literally denies that the sun is coming up in the morning. You just can't do that. It's too destructive to the social contract. We have to deal with all kinds of unpleasantries. War, financial debacles, holes in the ozone, scary documentaries about the polar ice caps melting and flooding all of southern United States. So, you know, the idea, well, we can't deal with the ET thing. I beg to differ. If you look at most of the stuff we're being told about, it's all downside.
Yeah.
Right? Derivative bubbles, environmental destruction. There's no doubt the ET thing has all kinds of incredible upside to it, whatever discomfort may be attached to it. So again, I am simply not worried about overall mental state of the public in a post-disclosure world. What I am very much worried about is the mental state and the actions and behavior of the unacknowledged special access black budget secret world that was built to manage all this stuff. That's where we need to be worried. That's where we have no idea what's going on and where things could happen which could be quite unsettling. There is a fundamental disregard and disdain for the general public by elite science and elite government that has got to be dealt with. There's two wonderful examples that they're a little out there. I mean, as examples, they're pretty good, but not perfect. But I like them anyway. And one is recent, and one is past. The past one, and I've told the story many times, so forgive me for repeating it. But during the Manhattan Project, at some point, some of the scientists there, based on some calculations, these are all pretty sharp people, raised a concern that as they were approaching the Trinity test launch, the very first bomb, that there was a possibility if they set the bomb off, it would set the atmosphere on fire and destroy the world. Okay. So, they all got
all
together
concerned.
And put their heads together on that, you know. And they finally decided that, well, it could happen, but the odds were low.
Oh, boy. But you're willing to take risks like this.
Yeah, basically, these are these elite scientists, and their attitude was like, you know, well, this is the coolest thing ever. We got this. We're going to explode an atom here.
Yeah, we
got to do this. And it might set the atmosphere on fire, but, you know, you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet. Now, and believe me, I guarantee you nobody raised their hand and said, why don't we go to the public and have a consensus on this? Why don't we have a referendum? Should we risk setting the atmosphere on fire by launching them? No. We got to win the World War II. Blah blah blah. All right. So, 60 years go by. So they build the latest atom smasher, the one in Europe, CERN, right? The Hydron. I forget the exact name. I'll look it up.
Super colliders.
The big collider.
Yeah.
So some of the scientists, you know, happened to let out that. This thing is so powerful that it's literally going to create mini black holes. So this kind of gets out into the mix, and the issue about, well, could that be a bad thing? You know, if we create a mini black hole, could it become a larger black hole, right?
Uh-huh.
And if that were to happen, then, of course, it could expand and destroy the Earth. It's called the Large Hadron Collider. Because they're looking for the ultimate particles, including the Higgs boson, which would be the gravity particle, and all this, and they're all quite excited. And it just reminded me of the Manhattan event, which I think was probably a little more serious. I'm not quite certain that if all those particle physicists got together at CERN, sat down in a big room, and worked it out, that they would have come to the same conclusion. We might create a black hole that could expand and destroy the Earth, but the odds are low.
It might be okay.
Just too neat. We got to do this. And do you think anybody in that room raised their hand and said, "Look, why don't we simply, go to the internet and do a referendum and see what the rest of the people think about this?"
Well,
not a chance in hell.
But do you think any of them thought, we might be destroying the world here?
I believe that it was raised. It was raised in a legitimate way initially by some scientists who looked at it and they ran the calculations and said, it couldn't do that. But do they really know for sure? No, they don't. The government does this. The scientists do this. In other words, we're just potted plants out here, right? We're just scenery. We're supposed to stand around and provide scenery and we have to incur a lot of debt and buy a lot of stuff to keep the economy going. But beyond that, we're really not of much use to the leadership and the high-end academics and scientists and so forth. This is an attitude which is real, and it has grown since the end of World War II. And it's been fed by the secrecy and the elitism and all the classified programs and the black budgets and the underground this and the underground that and the secret Bilderberger meetings and the secret this and the secret that and the skull and bones and the whole nonsense. And the people are starting to figure it out that, you know, whoa, you know, if we don't assert ourselves here, these people are going to continue to treat us like potted plants, and one day they may set the atmosphere on fire or burn the economy to the ground or create a black hole. Well, it's time to step to the plate. And we've got the biggest secret of all time, the biggest disinformation camp of all time, and the most important truth in the world. And if we want it, I think we can have it. And if we get it, I think we'll start a trend in the other direction. And we may start getting more truths, and we may get more transparency. And the next time they have a little get-together about launching some tech project that has a possibility of destroying the planet, we actually might get consulted. That's why you need to write that letter.
Hmm. Wow. You know, you raised an interesting point when you talk about the groups that are involved in the black budgets. And I have to say, I had never really thought about what would their attitude be toward disclosure. Whether they have anything to do with UFOs or not, it's sort of a cover for them.
Well, yeah, once you go there, then you can use any, I mean, you can do anything you want down in those laboratories.
Right.
You can study anything. You can do anything. Who the hell knows?
Right.
The Germans only wish they had that degree of opaqueness.
Yeah. I'm thinking these groups might not want disclosure.
Well, no, there are definitely people inside government don't want disclosure. I'm just saying that the consensus is moving towards disclosure, but it's not 100%. It's probably, I think, has been for a while, kind of about a 50-50. But yeah, but ultimately, most of the people that don't want it, it's not their call anyway. It's a call of a little higher up the chain, management committees, cross agency, that kind of stuff, and you know, and the president at some point be involved. But to get back to that earlier point, look, I would not be surprised at all if there have been a number of actions taken by the government since 1947. By some of these quote inside groups where they got together.
We talk about the government like it's a single huge
entity,
and it's not. It's a group of a huge number of individuals, all of whom have slightly different opinions and hopes and fears about what's
Whenever I say government, I'm referring to the inside management groups that deal with the ET issue. And I have no doubt that there have been a few get-togethers over these years where they came together to discuss some particular policy regarding the ETs. And somebody in the room raised their hand and said, well, you know, guys, it was all guys. You know, I mean, if there's been enough women involved in this truth embargo since the beginning to form a bridge team, I doubt it. All right, because it's just been a male thing from the beginning. And women are just a little less inclined to play these games, to get into the deep, dark, secret, obscure stuff. A little harder to go along with that. In any event, somebody raised their hand and said, you know, if we follow that policy, if we do this, you know, there's a chance that we might really irritate these ETs and we could start a war with them and they might come down and destroy every living human being. And I'm sure that they all thought about it for a second. Well, you know, it could happen, but the odds are low. Right? Now, how many times do you think that happened? I'll bet it happened more than a few times. One of these days, these guys are going to come together and come up with something, and they're going to do something, and they're going to say, it's okay, the odds are low, and the odds are going to be high. And we're going to end up paying the price. So if we're going to go down, I would prefer that we all be in on the decision-making process. Right? If we're going to build a, if we're going to build something that creates a black hole, let's all make the call.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Within reason, of course. I'm exaggerating for effect. But again,
right.
I'm telling you, we're dealing with
the fact that we'll not always be able to agree on everything, but at least we could get a majority.
At least let's have a, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
We're dealing with more and more complex technology of greater and greater power. We're dealing with ETs. We've got huge problems in the world. We cannot continue to operate from these clandestine, secret, cloistered, you know, cabal-like operations. You just can't do that. It's part of an old kind of thinking. It's part of the Middle Ages. It's still hanging around. It needs to go. We need cameras in the Bilderberger meetings. We need skull and bones to be kicked off the Yale campus. We need transparency, particularly in the executive operations. We need accountability when people screw up. We need a drastic reduction of the secret empire and vastly increased oversight by elected officials of all black operations. And a whole lot more. And I can assure you that none of what I just said is anywhere even within the miles of the current election going on. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely.
If any candidate actually brought up this kind of stuff, people would just fall out of their chair and go into paroxysms. I mean, it would just be, are you out of your mind? Only that it's really incredibly important. So we get nonsense and pablum and silliness and ridiculous crap.
There would be a delay as well. If politicians ever started talking actually about the issues, the public has gone for so long without really hearing anything about the issues that we'd need time to catch up. We'd all need to become educated about what's actually going on and what we need to be worried about.
It's funny, but whenever a third-party type person turns up and just tries to talk matter-of-factly about what's going on, they receive a tremendous response. But since they're third party, ultimately that response attenuates and they can't make it. And I think we can think of a number of examples. But for whatever reason, the Democratic and Republican Party apparatchiks don't get this. They don't realize that if one of their candidates were to turn up and actually start talking the straight stuff, the real straight stuff, kind of like Ross Perot did before he went gaga.
Yeah.
That people would go crazy. I mean, they would just flock. They would go, oh, my God, this person is actually talking the real deal.
Right. People,
but they can't bring themselves to do it. They're just in a stalemate. I mean, they're both living in this kind of surreal world of BS and spin, and they're just afraid if they depart from that world, they would lose. And so that's another way that we're stuck. The United States is stuck in so many loops, so many feedback loops, so many blind alleys. That we're just our power and influence and prestige and our economic well-being is just eroding like crazy. It's really fascinating to watch. I am so low on the totem pole, having worked for no salary for 12 years and stripped of everything down to practically nothing, no assets of any kind. I'm sort of insulated from all this, and so in a way I can sort of watch it with a bemusement, sort of like somebody on the outside watching the British Empire disassemble.
Yeah.
At the end of the age of colonialism. But you know, there's a whole lot of people out there who are going to suffer greatly, and I feel bad for them. But it's salvageable. But the American people need to step forward and say, look, I want truth in government. I want accountability in government. I want openness, transparency. I want to get the secrecy under control. I want to get the black budget under control. And I want to know the truth about my world. Now, I realize that there are some white lies that you like to tell, and occasionally you fib about your resume. That's okay. But if the Earth is going to explode, or there's extraterrestrials here, if the sun is going to turn to cream cheese, I want to know that. And if you know that and aren't telling me, I want you fired, removed, impeached, whatever. But I don't want you running anything. If we start doing that, we will find very quickly that things will start getting better.
Wow, Steve, I'm going to start calling you V.
Thank you.
Have you seen V for Vendetta?
Many times.
Oh, I love it.
Do I get to hang out with, what's her name?
Natalie Portman?
Yeah.
I was so happy to see she can act.
Oh, she can act. She's a very talented lady.
Well, I'd only seen her in the Star Wars movies, and nobody could act in those. So.
No, nobody. Acting wasn't allowed in those movies. In fact, acting would have ruined those movies.
I have to say, I'm really proud of my kids because they love V for Vendetta, too. And we actually watch it every year on November 5th.
You know, and it's interesting
that
November 5th, of course, is the day after the election.
That is the day.
And it's the day that we start the Million Facts in Washington, and I thank you for reminding me of that because I am going to get a hook up about it. I'm going to tie it to V. I'll probably violate umpteen copyright violations, but my attitude about that is sue me.
Remember the 5th of November.
Remember the 5th of November. Well, November 5 is the day after this election,
it's
the day that everybody could put that letter in the mail to change history.
And then go watch V for Vendetta again.
Then go watch V for Vendetta. See, I am a nonviolent guy. Believe me, I would never blow up anything.
Oh, no, I mean... But
it's a metaphor. I understand that, but
the message in that movie was all about people banding together.
Absolutely. That was the real message, not blowing up the parliament.
Right. When you were talking about people getting together and everybody sending these letters and these faxes together,
right?
I almost said at that time, this is just like V for Vendetta.
That's
because
right.
What you're saying is we all need to get together, get on the same project at the same time, and tell our government we don't like what you're doing and we want you to stop.
Well, but very specific now. In letters like, we don't like what you're doing don't work. The letters have got to be, we want the truth embargo to end.
Oh, absolutely.
You see, unambiguous statements like that force them and the media to address it. Right?
Yeah,
they can't
dismiss
it. The
fact of all of us sending these letters is the same message as what was in V for Vendetta, which is the people coming together and saying,
exactly,
you have to stop this. We don't like the way things have been happening.
And if we send a million letters to the president-elect, we will not blow up Parliament. We will literally blow up a worldview that exists in Washington right now. So, but again, I prefer to stay away from these, you know, martial and metaphors and that kind of speaking, even though it's ingrained in our culture, and I do it from time to time. And remember, the November 5th, incident that, of course, is the heart of V, Hawkins, was another time.
Day.
Yeah, it was from another time, an earlier time. This is an enlightened time. We are post-King, post-Gandhi.
Right.
Who was
one person doing it. Guy Fawkes was one man, and he had to do something as big
dramatic,
as blowing up Parliament to get everyone's attention.
Now we don't have to do that. We
exactly.
don't have to blow things up to
now
get changed.
Now we have email. And now we have...
email and letters and faxes and communication. We have internet. We have satellite stuff. We've got cell phone text. We've got Facebook. Let me tell you something. If everybody on this economic thing, if everybody has sent a bunch of email, millions of email into Washington saying, we want the economy to get better, they would have dismissed it. Would have been like, yeah, everybody does. But they were sending email like, if you vote for that bill, we're tossing your butt out of office. That gets their attention. So specifics are critical when you're doing concert action. So action and concert. That's why we, on the Facts on Washington website, we have the three key points that need to be included in that letter, one or more of them. We want hearings. We want you to have a full briefing, meaning, you know, you go in and they say, Mr. President, you don't have a need to know anything about that subject, so if it's okay with you, just keep that. And you say, well, you're fired. Oh, well, Mr. President, you can't fire me. Well, actually, I can. Oh, okay. And then the next guy comes up, you know, and says, well, you know, Mr. President, probably better if he just stays ignorant on this subject. That way he wouldn't have to end you. You're fired. See, about two guys into that, and boy, would the documents and the briefing papers start turning up at the office.
Yeah.
Well, it takes a little guts. It takes some courage, but, you know, we ain't getting anywhere without that. So we need to... But courage comes in many forms, and so you put a million letters into the president-elect, and basically you're giving that person courage. You're stealing them.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting them built up. You're giving them, it's like vitamins. Every single letter to the president, it'd be like a vitamin pill.
Right. Politicians like to do what is going to be politically popular. And if we send a million letters all saying, here's what I want you to do, and it's all the same thing, then they know what's popular, and it'll be easy for them to do it.
Right, and there's a formula there that they use, and it's a good one. I forget the exact numbers, but one letter, I think, is viewed as the sentiments of something like 10 people or 20 people. In other words, if one person actually sends a letter in this issue, there's 19 more behind them that think that way, but would whatever. But so a million letters really translate to many, many millions of people. Yeah, and they know that. They understand that. And that's a lot of people. And this is a big issue. This is not small. You know, there are people out there that have tried to get letter campaigns on, say, drilling in Anwar. Well, drilling in Anwar is an important issue. I understand that. But it's still not massive, and it's not easy to get a whole lot of people to act at one time on that. But we're talking about the fact that we are being engaged by non-human civilizations, maybe more than one, have been for a long time. They're flying all over the place. They're abducting and contacting some of our people, some without consent, some with. There's technology that could potentially change the world, and all of that's stuck behind a truth embargo the government's 61 years at. That's as big as it gets, right? It don't get any bigger than that. So if you're going to write one letter in your life to the president-elect, this is the one. This is the letter. So you go to factsonwashington.org, read it, takes about 5 minutes, get that fax or letter together, preferably a letter. One fax machine can only handle 480 faxes a day. So, and what they do when they get a lot of faxes is they tend to just shut the number down and come up with another one rather than add more fax machines. And I don't even want to go there because it makes me angry to talk about it. But if they change the fax number, I'll just get it and I'll just republish it and I'll just keep doing that. But, you know, we probably at best could get about 25,000 faxes in those 77 days. But I called it Facts on Washington because I liked the way it sounded.
Well, yeah, it's pithy.
Yeah, million letter on Washington doesn't work.
No.
Million facts work. So million facts work, but it's mostly letters. That's the key. We want lots and lots and lots of letters.
Well, because we're also looking for the facts.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah.
So true.
The right mindset in us.
And the uber activists out there will send a letter, a fax, and an email to the president-elect. They will copy their two congresspeople and their senator, right? Their two senators and their congressperson, rather. And then they'll notify PRG that they've done this so that I can have a database of how many people are doing this so I can make sure the press covers it. That's your uber activist. That's the hat trick. That's the whole enchilada.
Is that anywhere on the site?
Oh, yes,
I don't remember seeing that.
Definitely.
Yeah, I missed it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's all there.
Good, because I was really impressed at the way you laid that out. You gave everybody all the information they need, but you didn't put in a sample letter because you don't want people to send the same letter.
No. Anytime they get lots of stock scripted letters,
exactly.
They pretty much toss it out. And the reason is that it's too easy to mass generate those.
Yeah.
And put false signatures on.
And forget that.
Yeah. So we don't do that. And it's a much more powerful message when it's not scripted. So I'm going to go that way and hope people will understand. Again, they don't have to write their life history. They don't have to send them a 25-page report of the sighting they had in 1982. They don't have to. Just a one-page, two-paragraph note saying, "Hey, I'm pretty sure ETs are here, and I think it's time you acknowledge that." Right? If you're the president, you should be briefed on this fully by your president. If they don't brief you, you fire them until someone that's in charge will. And we got a whole lot of witnesses out here that should be in front of Congress right now under oath.
That's what it comes down to. We need to band together and stand up and say, no, that is not doing your job that we put you in there for.
Right.
And
misrepresenting reality is no longer acceptable in America.
Right.
You know, it had its place. No longer. We don't want that. You got to tell us the truth about reality.
That's what made me think of V for Vendetta when we started talking about that, because all I could think of was that the quote where he said people shouldn't be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Ideally, neither should be afraid of each other, but if you're going to have to pick one...
In the sense of, I'm going to lose my job if I don't do what the people want me to do.
Now, V for Vendetta, you've got a state there that's very, very... it's fascist, it's controlling, it's manipulative, it's very Orwellian. And that's what they're talking about. Now,
mm-hmm.
We're not there yet. I want to make it clear. We are not... The United States is not at the place where, quote, the British government is, as it's shown in the movie V for Vendetta. But are we heading in that direction? Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Now, we could turn on a dime, right? And I suspect we're going to see that happen in the next administration, because there's clearly sentiment to go the other way. So we're not there yet. So this isn't about, ridding the world of, that America's gone fascist and we got to save ourselves from fascism. No.
No, but I have to say, when we watched it last night, our kids had some friends over who had never seen it before. And when they talked about the curfew, there was an 11 p.m. curfew
mm-hmm.
in this movie. And one of our guests turned around and said, "Hey, we have a curfew now." And we do. Kids are supposed to be off the street by 11 p.m. And it made me realize that the first time I saw this movie, we didn't have that.
But, guess what? This makes a very interesting point. There is a reason for that curfew, and we know what it is, that the community is trying to protect children, trying to minimize juvenile crime, help parents deal with the difficulty of raising a kid in the modern world. And the principal reason the community goes along with it is that they trust the community's intentions there. In other words, they believe the community is, in fact, acting in their best interest, and they have gone along with it, because most of those curfews usually require city votes, council votes, and those people are elected by the citizens. When trust in government, though, drops so low, and as low as it's getting now, you find more and more people just don't believe or trust any action you do, regardless of your intent or motive, in which case it gets very difficult to do anything. And so some people, given the current level of the social contract, would say that's just the beginning of more fascism. Pretty soon they'll be putting curfews on adults, which
right.
they will do under certain circumstances.
Well, sure.
So it's the difference. A healthy society, there's a relatively high trust in government mixed with a healthy skepticism. The government understands it serves the people and not the other way around. And generally things will go pretty well. Not that things don't go wrong. They will. We're clearly out of balance there. We have moved well beyond what I said comfort zone. And we're starting to see people rail against that. So some of their objections are justified, some are not, but they all reflect a fundamental distrust that has deepened since 1945, after the war ended. Right? Remember, the war ended because we created a super-secret bomb program that nobody knew about, and then we just suddenly dropped the bombs on the Japanese and then told everybody afterwards. Let's not argue that, but the point is that literally the new world, the world we're in, which was really born the day those bombs were dropped, started in deepest dark secrecy, and it's continued in that vein, and now it's starting to take its toll. It's really causing problems, and of course the problems only grow with the complexity of the world and the increasing population, which is relentless. So we need to take significant measures. Now, I don't have the answers to all this stuff. There are far too many questions, and there's plenty of groups dealing with every single component of it. But I do know one thing. We have a major stumbling block that's been parked in our way. It's a door that's blocking us from a lot of things and a lot of options. And it is the truth embargo regarding ET presence. We need to get through that door. We need to open it up. And a lot of other things, in my opinion, will become easier to deal with in the post-disclosure world. If I'm wrong, sue me.
Someone probably will.
Well, they're going to be deeply disappointed.
Well, see, that's the other thing about being a UFO researcher, author type person.
Mm.
I mean, we're in this too. Is that, you know, go ahead, sue us. We don't have anything.
That's right.
Dylan
said it best. When you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose.
Absolutely.
Which makes us even more dangerous.
Well, yeah. It just kills me when skeptics say, you know, oh, well, that person just wanted to get in this for the money.
Yeah, I know. I love
money.
That.
I'm like, where's the money?
Don't you love it? Yeah, I just think they're hysterical. That's the least stupid thing they say. But that's okay. I mean, that's fine. I mean, this is. I have no problem. I chose that, and I'm perfectly comfortable. I wouldn't know what to do with all the damn money anyway. I just waste it on silly nonsense. But there are people out there that do need money. They are.
Yeah.
I mean, very few people can take the road I've taken. Most people can't, and they need an economy that works. They need a government that tells the truth. And I'm going to do what I can to help that happen in my own way. But it's not just my way. There's a movement here. There's a lot of people involved. You've had many of them on your show that are pushing this issue, not only in the U.S., but in Canada and elsewhere. The Exopolitics World Network is thriving. It's growing. The Exopolitics United States Network is still incipient, but I'm hoping some states will join up soon enough. It's spreading.
A huge, huge number of returns on the Google and Yahoo searches.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's growing. Now, Exopolitics now, I think, produces about 680,000 returns on Yahoo.
And that's as of the end of August. It's probably even higher by now.
Oh, yeah. And if Facts on Washington works, I imagine the Exopolitics returns on Yahoo by the end of the year will probably be up in the 1.5 million range, maybe even higher. So we're in an exponentially developing movement that's operating, you know, there's no marches on Washington. That's too expensive. You just can't do that anymore. It costs about $5 a person. You want 1 million people in Washington, you better raise $5 million. Whereas I could potentially orchestrate 1 million letters into Washington, and it would cost me maybe $1,000. Right? 1 million letters, $1,000, 1 million people on the mall, 5 million. You see the cost, the ratio there. And that's the future of activism. It's the future of politics. It's internet. It's cyberspace. And it's communication through email, faxes, and letters. That's the future. Not feet on the mall. People don't have the money to do it. It's too expensive to do it, and it's not necessary to do it. So I think they're trying to figure that out. So don't go to the mall. Don't spend $400 or $800 to go to Washington, stand in the mall in damp weather. Just send a 42-cent stamped letter to the president-elect, you and 999,999 of your brethren, and guess what? We will turn this town upside down. And it needs to be turned upside down.
Now, Steve, we've got about 10 minutes left, and I'm curious to know, have you heard about the possibility of disclosure actually coming next week?
Not disclosure, but there's some wonderful internet stuff about a craft turning up over the Southwest.
Yeah, not so much disclosure by the government as being forced.
Yeah, which is not a good thing. You know, I don't know anything. That I have no idea whether anything will show up on the 14th. I don't speculate about such things. If it does, it does. And if it does, that will be interesting. My take on all that is that all these prognostications and speculations and net things you hear and channel material, at minimum, this reflects the fact that a very large number of people do know that something profound is happening. They feel it in their gut, and they want to respond to it. They want to speak to it. They want to be part of it, and I perfectly understand that. And all channeling and all this other stuff is one way that people are trying to connect with this very profound thing that's going on. Now, as far as who's saying what and who knows what and who's getting channeled, who is it, I have no idea. So all the channel stuff and all these kind of prognostications, I just put them in a box and put it off the side. I don't judge them. I just put them in a box and function and focus on the real politique. In other words, the basic stuff. What's going on? What can be done right now? What's doable right now? What is the policy of the government? How can the policy be changed? And then someday, maybe post-disclosure, we'll open up that box and look at all this stuff, and maybe we'll sort of see who may have been really in touch with somebody. We know the ETs are telepathic, so if they want to stick messages in people's minds, very, very Old Testament, wouldn't you agree? They can do so. So to dismiss anybody out of hand who says they've received a message from some higher source would be just a little bit, arrogant.
It would be kind of like saying there is no life elsewhere outside of Earth. I mean, how do we know?
Yeah, well, it would just be neglecting the reality that in fact, ETs are able to do this. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I do know this. If a craft were to turn up like that and stay there for 3 days, it might very well trip disclosure, but it would be a forced disclosure, and it would be much more destructive. If the government was forced to acknowledge the ET presence because a craft was stuck over Atlanta for 3 days, the government would look impotent, and the irritation with the government and the anger toward government would be far, far, far greater. It would be a much more destructive and disturbing event. And the way to avoid that is to disclose. But the fact is, the ETs can force the issue anytime they want to. And so far, they haven't. Now we've got some saying that they may push some buttons on the 14th. Well, maybe they'll push it, but not too hard. Maybe it'll turn up and go away. Anything, you know, it's like the O'Hare sighting and the Stephenville sighting. Any sightings now are sufficiently covered that they definitely move the ball up the court. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if these sightings are intentional by the ETs to keep pushing that ball up the court. But they never go so far as to trip the switch. They never actually create a irreversible news event that would force disclosure. They always seem to stay just short of that. That's an interesting thing and a very significant
thing. Partly because of our media not picking it up.
Well, again, the media picks up what it picks up. I'm just saying that whatever the ETs do, they always seem to fall short of force majeure disclosure. I believe that's intentional, but I can't prove it.
It sort of has the feel to me that they keep trying. You know, like, we'll try appearing over a major airport.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, one guy broke the story, and then it sort of fizzled, you know.
Well, it fizzled. Well, it ran a standard news cycle, but it had quite a few articles, all of which are still around. They're archived on
my site. More than before, but then it kind of died out.
Yeah,
people in the field were really into it, but a lot of the general public didn't know or didn't care about it.
Which is all very standard. That's true of almost anything.
And that's my point. And then the next thing was, you know, the ETs said, well, okay, well, let's try Stephenville. Let's try peering down there to a bunch of people.
Don't think of it as trying this or trying that. Think of it as a strategic, consistent plan of keeping the issue alive and keeping things moving, but without tripping disclosure itself. And which gets me to my analytical, how would you say, speculation or hypothesis, and that's all it is that this is intentional. And the only reason that I can see for it, which is, you know, again, I'm pulling this out of my tuchus, but the point is that the only reason that I can see for this kind of systematic just short of disclosure kind of showings that they do, is that they are pushing self-disclosure. They're trying to keep moving things forward, so at some point the government simply self-disclose to the people, and that is, again, less destructive, right? More appropriate, and will cause less disruption. And then once we have self-disclosed and taken a few years to sort of digest all this, then I wouldn't be surprised if full-out formal contact happened. This is just my theory. But it's not rocket science, and it makes a lot of sense. But that doesn't mean it's right. And we're talking about ETs, and I don't know how they think or what their motives are, but it does make a lot of sense. And until I see, I feel otherwise, I'm going to continue to put that out there, because I think it's the best hook to hang things on right now. They're forcing self-disclosure through a defined and limited citing events. And then once we have self-disclosed, then formal disclosure will take place thereafter. And what's cute about that, and I've said this before, is that assuming that sort of transition or digesting period is of a couple of years, that would put disclosure or open contact, formal contact, right around 2012, which I just find just adorable.
Steve, you've been working in this field for years. What kind of interest are you seeing in government insiders? I mean, I know you've invited several to your ex-conferences. A lot of people have come and have told their stories.
Yeah. Not just insiders, but witnesses and insiders.
Well, witnesses, right. What kind of interest are you seeing among people who actually are guarding the secrets?
What we're seeing is that the willingness of insiders to speak is growing. The breadth of what they're saying is widening. We're seeing comments coming from high-end government people, Bill Richardson, John Podesta. We're seeing other positioning being taken place. So, yeah, there's a clear trend towards the door is opening, right? The barriers are breaking down, not only on the outside, but on the inside as well. It's a little harder to... It's easy to track the media coverage, like I do in my archive there. You know, just I get a feed on all those news articles. I put them. It's very easy to do this. It's very hard to track the mindset of the insiders.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, there is definitely a trend. They're opening up more and more, and witnesses continue to come forward. So that is one of the things that supports my view that we're very close to disclosure, because if the embargo was still in really strong effect, there would be efforts to shut these people up. There'd be efforts to rein them in, and overall, it's not happening. So it just tells me that the embargo is almost in a passive mode now. It's running on almost its own momentum, but there's no new energy being put into it.
So, in the last couple of minutes that we have tonight, I can't believe 2 hours has gone by already. What plans do you have for the X conference for next year?
Well, it's scheduled for April 16, 17, 18, roughly around that weekend. The website is up, xconference.com, x-conference.com. There's a couple of speakers that are already signed up. Richard, of course, is signed already. He's on board. And Jeff Peckman, Art Campbell, be talking about Eisenhower. I'm holding off on signing up anymore, though, because I want to see where things are going. But I'm hoping people register early and all that. The registration is up on the net, because that helps me get things forward, move things along. But potentially the X conference in April could be a big deal. If things move generally in the direction I'm going, I would anticipate X conference could be quite a big event. And maybe we'll fill up the hotel and the venue. We'll have to cut off attendance. That would be a wonderful thing. But a lot's going to happen between now and next April.
If we all send out these letters in November and December,
mm-hmm.
and into January 20th, someone's taking office between the end of January and April when the X conference is held.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what could happen?
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, anything could happen between now and then. And I'm hoping that we make progress, and the X conference will benefit from that. We have a great event and fill it up. That would be nice. So... But at this point, I have a couple speakers signed, but I do have the registration forms up and on the net. People can register right now. they can sign up for the hotel right now, and they should, because there's a good chance we will book out the hotel this time around. I'm a little worried about the financial thing, that airfares may go through the roof and other stuff, and that won't help. But what can you do? But certainly we will have an X conference in April.
And I'm sorry, I know you just gave the website, but what was that again?
X-conference.com.
X-conference, written down.
.com.
Okay.
And then factsonwashington.org and paradigmresearchgroup.org. These are the three sites that one would want to, but all of them are linked from the main site, paradigmresearchgroup.org. That's the portal to my entire empire. So you go there and you can link to everything else.
Okay, I'm just putting these back up on the message board one last time, and about out of time. Steve, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. It's been really great talking with you.
Oh, it's always great talking to you, Karen, and my best to the kids and to Richard. And you're doing your darndest to help get the word out, and I know it's going to help.
Yeah, and I guess I'll see you in a few weeks if I can get to Las Vegas with Rich.
Hope you can.
Well, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a nice event. Looking forward to that. I'll be also at the Culture of Contact in Jersey City on October 17th.
And I've got that up on the website as well.
Yeah, nice little event. It's going to be at Lowe's Theater. It's a very cool theater in Jersey City, Lowe's. So people should check it out. All the info's up on the website. And then I'll be at Crash Retrieval on November 17th. And then November 7 to 9. I think we're going to do a Sedona event, but we're going to have to a new venue because they closed down the Dream Theater, sadly, because it was a cool place.
We'll keep checking your websites then for updates on that.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, and that is all the time we have this evening. Thanks again, Steve, for coming. And thanks to everyone who's listening tonight. This has been Through the Keyhole, live on Paranormal Radio Network and also on UPRN 105.3 FM in New Orleans. Archives are now available at paranormalradionetwork.org, on iTunes, and also on blackvaultradio.com. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and I do want to thank Steve again. I know I keep doing this, but it's just so great to talk to you.
Well, I love talking with you. You and Richard are my favorite people, and I'm really pleased that you've gotten so involved with this. Richard's a very important guy in all this, and I know you've been a tremendous supporter of him. And we're looking for his next book, and we're going to promote that book, and who knows, a couple million copies would be nice, right?
He is working so hard on that. He really, really wants it done, so.
And it's going to be, I know it's going to be great.
Very soon.
It's going to be great.
Okay.
All the best.
Thanks, you too, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Stay tuned, everyone, for Portal, coming up next with Tuesday Miles and Angela Thomas. Thanks. See you next week.